Welcome to the Drunk Guys Book Club, where books, where books are just for school, where book clubs are just for women, and these cans are fake.
Je m'appelle Mike.
I'm Nate.
I'm Jimmy.
We are the Drunk Guys, and this week we're escaping from this fucking prison that is the Booker Long List by reading Creation Lake by Jared Kushner. Rachel Kushner. So who's starting with beer?
Fuck it.
I am.
I'll do it.
Okay.
Yeah.
You do it.
So, all right. The main character of the story, she is going undercover to infiltrate like leftist organizations. And first she has to, and to get the main one, she talks about others, but there's a main one she infiltrates in the book, which are like environmentalists. But she infiltrates them by seducing a guy who knows them. And he was definitely a delicate genius by Three's Brewing. Yeah, this is Delicate Genius, hazy IPA, one pint. Yeah, and it's good. Mm-hmm. Very nice. That's it. So, that's my report.
Okay.
There you go.
So Creation Lake
is the last book we have to read on this
Thank
list.
Thank God. I don't know what we could, it's like we got early parole. I don't even know, like,
good
what
behavior
to do with this. Yeah, the beginning is the very first thing I think is her the main character whose moniker, her alias that she's using is Sadie, but that's not her real name, and you never find out what her real name is reading emails that this fucking environmentalist Svengali has been sending, and he's the leader of the, you know, organization.
He's not so much the leader as he is the inspiration for,
right,
and kind of a
the
weird
philosophical leader.
Yeah,
right. He writes the treatises, and then they go and, you know, bomb the John Deere factories. And he's talking on and on about Neanderthals, and I was like, "What the fuck is this book about?" Because this was a spy thriller, and he says an interesting combination of things that are real and things that are just fucking made up nonsense. Did you notice that, Nate? Like when he talks about Neanderthals,
so much of it was just like, "Well, that's just pure speculation. Like there is absolutely no way." When it says like Neanderthals were prone to depression, like how the fuck would we know that?
Have you seen what they look like? They had to be.
Would you fuck them? Well, clearly somebody did.
I'd fuck them. I'd fuck them. But it was the other thing he said. Oh, they invented smoking because he's French. So he's like, that is the original human activity, smoking a cigarette. Like, it's Neanderthals. But they...
And the only time anyone ever pushes back on what this guy says, and one of them brings up the point that wasn't tobacco a New World crop? And he's like, oh, no. He was like, oh, that doesn't matter. They still invented smoking.
Yeah. And they all just go, okay, because he spins bullshit. And, you know, some of it, you know, I don't know. I mean, it wasn't kind, I don't think it was really the point of the book, but it was a lot of Neanderthal talk.
It was.
And I don't know what the point of the book was.
No, it was fake titties, I think, was a significant component. But that's happening, and you're like, what's going on? And then 400 pages later, it ends, and you go, well, something went on. But she is trying to infiltrate this group, and the guy's name is Lancome, the fucking cosmetic company. Oh, but he has another name, and I forgot what it is already.
Bruno.
Bruno, right.
Well, Bruno Lancome is the email philosopher who lives in a bunch of old caves he found under his farm and has retreated from society. But he still has Gmail.
And a very guessable password. His password was like
Neanderthal 6969.
Bone age. So he's, so she's reading these and she's like, you know, because this is her target. She's infiltrating and she works for, you will find out throughout the course of the book, you'll find out nothing, but she works not for a government. She is a private spy contractor, which I don't know how they advertise for that. Is that like on Craigslist?
Craigslist.
Yeah. They're like, we're into dry work. And I'm like, that's, I know what that means. And so she's trying to infiltrate this and it's cutting back and forth, and there'll be like random little snippets of another job she did, but you get no backstory of her. You get nothing about who she is.
Because you're not allowed to know who she is, because she doesn't exist. She is pretending to be someone else, and so all you know about her is that she is, everything about her is fake.
You hear a little bit about some of her previous jobs, but only a little bit, but nothing about her as an actual person growing up, who her parents are, what school was like, nothing like that.
How she got into this work.
Yeah.
Which I honestly wish, and I'm sure that's not the point of the book, but like, that's kind of what makes these characters interesting. That's why people read Jason Bourne books. Because you're like, ooh, who is this person? And he's a mysterious.
That was the whole point of Jason Bourne. He was trying to figure it out too.
Right. Where you get none of that. But like, she speaks 5 European languages fluently. And she's, you know, expert with weapons and is really hot. She
doesn't do a lot of weapons stuff.
She doesn't. But like, she knows about, you know, she, oh, I have a special gun that's modified to have extra bullets or some shit. And, you know, it's implied at least that she must have some weapons training for what she does.
Well, she used to work for the feds, the FBI in America, where her last case working for them was convincing some kid to do an eco-terrorism and then
to buy like 1,200 pounds of fertilizer.
Yeah, and something real subtle. And then they successfully, his lawyer said, like, this was entrapment. He never would have done this on his own. And the jury was, yeah, that actually makes sense. He's a dumb kid. And she, like, this mystery informant or, you know, agent provocateur convinced him to do this. And so he got acquitted. And the FBI was like, actually, fuck you. We're not going to use you anymore. So now she's on her own in the private sector.
Isn't that common with the feds, though? Like, don't they do a good amount of entrapping?
Oh, they do a shitload. Was it
the Gresham Whitmer thing?
Whitmer, yeah. They pushed those guys to try to kidnap the governor, yeah.
Yeah, and they're like, we busted this plot, like, because you put them up to
it. You did the plot. What was in the 70s, the whole COINTELPRO thing, when the people broke into the FBI offices and just published everything they found, and it turned out like they were infiltrating groups all over and pushing them to do crazy shit so they could bust them. Mostly Black Panthers and other leftist organizations. Because Hoover was a psycho.
Well, his garter was on too tight that day. So he was like, I have to take this out on somebody.
His panties were in a bunch.
Yes. I've been watching.
He died in the 70s. So just after he died.
Yeah. This was like 71, I want to say, for the COINTELPRO stuff. Which was like counterintelligence something, blah, blah, blah.
I know it's a detraction from the book, but you know, fuck this book. That I've been watching The Sopranos. You guys ever actually watch the show?
Never did.
Most of the first season, but
there's one of the conflicts in the first 2 seasons is like one of the guys is an FBI informant, and Tony doesn't know that right away. But it's because he got busted doing something else, and the guy's just like, the FBI informant is constantly like, I need you to do this, or I need you to get this recorded. Get him to say this. And he's like, he's going to fucking suspect that and then kill me. And he's like, well, then you shouldn't have been selling heroin, huh? Like, they're just fucking assholes about it. And reading this book, you know, that scene, it's like, that makes sense.
That's like one thing they do. But this is, in this instance, and what happened in these other things was they sent in an undercover person who then tried to make everything more intense in the actual groups. And some people were like, we don't want to do that. That's fucking crazy. Why would we do that? And they keep pushing and pushing to do more and more violence and public acts so the FBI can bust the group.
It's like the federal agent version of those people who try to unionize by like getting hired in the warehouse, the assaulting or whatever that's called. So that's why she's not a Fed anymore. And she works for, we don't know who, but she's worked for different. She mentioned in passing, she worked for like John Deere at one point. So she's like, her niche is infiltrating ecological, you know, green,
like leftists banditos specifically,
right?
And a lot of them are like, you know, radical environmentalist groups.
And the plot of this one is, even for a book, really fucking weird.
Well, she's like, you must throw more SpaghettiOs on the paintings. That's how she encourages them to just ratchet things up.
Use meatballs next time.
No one likes the SpaghettiOs or meatballs. Least of
all,
Van Gogh throws on the painting.
But in this book, she has been hired by someone, theoretically probably a French company, because she is in France trying to infiltrate an anarchist collective of farm commune people who have, they think are going to attack these construction sites because the plan that France has instituted or is going to institute is they're going to build huge
plastic reservoirs
and drain all the water from under the soil, like the, you know, natural springs and reservoirs,
and
put them into there to keep them safe, which is, first of all, insane. How big would that reservoir have to be to drain all the groundwater?
I think, though, the book didn't really explain this, but I think the way it would work is you catch all the rain in the reservoirs, and then the aquifers aren't being replenished.
Yeah.
But it's a way to, it's a way to privatize water. That's like some Jewish space laser shit. Like, that they, we're going to get all the rain? That's like a James Bond villain plan from 1964.
You capture more of it. Yeah. I mean, there are instances of companies around the world basically privatizing public water supplies. And this is like the Dr. Evil version of that in terms of outlandishness. Like, I'm going to build a big bucket and take all the water. It's like, oh, okay, yeah. But she is looking for that.
Cry me a river.
No, it's my river now. But yeah, so she has to infiltrate this group called Le Moulin, which means, very threateningly, the windmill. And get them, either uncover their plot or do something to make them go crazy and get them busted. Because it's a private company. You can't actually get them arrested for, you know, just like doing crimes. But you can make them do crimes so public that they end up busting the whole organization.
So somebody had torched a bunch of like equipment, like big excavators on the construction site, but they didn't know who. And so the police have no leads. So the corporation, you never find out who it is, or someone in the corporate world hired her to infiltrate them to see if she can get some information, or at least get them disrupted or get them arrested and stuff like that.
And so that's the first half of the book to figure this out.
Because she doesn't actually get to the place to infiltrate until about halfway through the book.
She spends the first half of the book drinking a shit ton.
Yeah.
And reading
a guy's emails about weird shit. And angrily pretending to want to bang the guy she's convinced. But not liking it.
Oh, then I'll open this other beer.
Well...
You know, it's in they're in France and they're speaking in French most of the time. And, you know, I'm sure, you know, when they're doing the banging, you know, they say things differently there, right? But they translate funny. And he's probably, you know, this is so stupid. But it's like, you know, he's like, I want to, you know, fuck you in your puss. But like, that's like, I need to touch your forbidden pumpkin. It's like, how do I fit this in? Oh, you just cram it in. You just shove it right in.
You know, I saw that at the store. Couldn't make it work, but you know what? You found a way.
I'm proud of you. That's what the people pay us for, Nate. It's that ingenuity. So this is Forbidden Pumpkin from Abomination, which describes half the show of the Booger Long List. And it's an Imperial Milkshake IPA with pumpkin, spices, vanilla, and milk sugar. And it's really fucking, really, really fucking good. I think we've had this before, or some version of this before.
The pumpkin beers all kind of blur together.
But like a pumpkin milkshake IPA from Abomination, I think we've actually had. They make a lot of these beers. That's really good. So yeah, he's banging her. He's touching her forbidden pumpkin. And
what was the fake boyfriend's name? I forget.
The guy in the beginning, the guy who was like, they go to his ancestral home.
Yeah, the guy, she's staying in the region in his house, in like his family's house.
It's like really remote France. It's not.
Yeah, they're in bumfuck. You know, where you can have a farming commune.
But they still need to be within range of a cigarette factory so they could smoke.
Oh, yeah.
As, you know, yeah. The French do. I have no idea what his name was. I'm going to say Gerard Depardieu, but I know it's not that.
Is it Lucien? Is
that Yeah. That's the guy in the beginning, yeah.
Okay, yeah. Lucien is her the man she's happened upon at a event or a cafe or some shit, and he, you know, she plays him into thinking that he makes all the right moves, and now they're together, and he's a filmmaker.
It was not hard to seduce him. Not at all.
No, he's French. She just had to be there. And she has, and she says many times she has awesome fake boobs.
She doesn't reveal that they're fake right away. That's one of the big reveals of the book. Because she constantly is talking about how, like, the book has this kind of detached tone. Because this is a job. It's not something she's doing because she wants to do it. It's just for a paycheck. So she's like, I do this, I do that. I drink a shit ton of room temperature French beer. She does a lot of stuff like that. But then, so say, people think I'm beautiful because I am, you know, tall and good looking, you know, brunette or whatever.
But she has a very plain face.
Yeah, like pretty, but not memorable. But then she mentions, oh, I have a, you know, flat stomach and large breasts, large firm breasts. And the first time I was like, nice. But like the eighth time, I'm like, why is this keep coming up? This is not, I mean, this is what men think character development is.
It's like a fantasy novel where they're always thinking about where their boobs are in their, you know, leather vest.
It's like she said, what was it? Is it Eye of Argon? She said bustily or something.
Anyway, so why did she bring that up? Well, because it was obviously like, well, in a book like this, nothing there is there by accident. And it's like, well, she's fake. Well, like, you know, she brings up her breasts a lot, which are fake. Because she's fake, this is a persona. She's just pretending, but they're a very well done fake, and she's pretty good at it too.
The line that I was like, oh, they're fake boobs, because like I didn't care, but like they kept coming up. As she says something like, I give the name, my name is as, either she says like my name is as real as my breasts, or my breasts is as real as my name. She says something like that. But at this point, you know that the name is fake. You're like, aha. Uh-huh.
Nice. It all comes together.
Well, they do. The guys do. She fakes it.
But eventually, after way too long, she gets down there and she, you know, slowly, you know, comes across the group. Like, because she gets with this dude because he is old-time friends with the leader of the commune, Pascal. And, you know, because they don't just let anybody in. You got to be someone they know so they can vet, because, you know, they're worried about infiltrators. So eventually she gets to know them, and she gets to, you know, hang out at the commune and watch them farm and talk about books and knowledge. And it's like, oh, sure, okay, yeah, that sounds boring.
She works translating their treatises, you know, into English, right? That's like,
yeah,
her job.
Spend a lot of time circle jerking about theory. A political theory, which is everyone's idea of a good time. And she keeps talking about the older couple who sit around in their Maoist hats and in the town square. And no one will let them join because they don't know them, and they're old, and they look stupid. But eventually she'll use them later, because she uses everybody.
Well, they ascribe to the revolution, the Beatles revolution style of thinking, that if you go carrying pictures of Chairman Mao, you're not going to make it with anyone anyhow.
Is that a line?
That's a line in Revolution.
Because you know it's going to be.
Okay, never mind. Nate knows that song.
I absolutely know that song, yeah.
So it was new.
She's infiltrating So she's staying at this dude's house by herself while he's off directing a film. But while she's staying there, she's driving over to the commune and like, hanging out with people who don't really trust her. Don't really trust her exactly. But a few do, because she's hot and because, you know, she actually is good at, because she speaks multiple languages. She can translate, you know, their French stuff into English and probably other things too. The book doesn't talk about much about like that kind of thing. But that's what she does. And she's just slowly gaining their trust and learning how it works, and like talking. She talks to this other woman who was in the commune but was kicked out for being too radical. I thought that was going to matter, but then it didn't.
She got kicked out also because, like any commune or small fringe group, the guy in charge is going to try and fuck all the ladies. Happens every time. And so she was one of those ladies who got done by Pascal, and she was a little angry about that. And so they said, oh, actually, we don't like you. You can go. You're messing with our vibe here.
Yep. And a bunch of things happen. Not a ton happens.
She spends a lot of time reading emails
about Neanderthals.
Which I think there must be a purpose to that. I mean, so she's...
I mean, the vibe I got from the Neanderthal thing was, like, he's talking a lot about how, like, the Neanderthals died out, but, like, why? When we have the Earth, we control it, and we've destroyed everything, the Neanderthals never would have. Some kind of vibe like that, like, why them? Why not us?
So the generic environmentalist misanthropy. We're just like, oh, we're so bad. And then, therefore, Neanderthals are a really interesting question. Like, what the fuck happened to them? And then, you know, I think we've talked about this on a bunch of episodes now. The fucking Cave Bear book and the Inheritors. It's a litmus test for how you think of humans. Like, how you answer the question of what happened to Neanderthals. And so if you're a radical environmentalist, you know, like, humans and capitalism are ruining the planet, you're going to be like, oh, of course, the Neanderthals did everything right. When evidence, there's just as much evidence of, like, they did everything right, that they also, like, fucking may have been cannibals. Like, they may have butchered, like, it's not clear, but, like, there's signs that their dead were butchered. Was it the way they defleshed? You don't know why, so you speculate, you fill those gaps in, but people just make up whatever they want. Yeah,
there's so little evidence you could put almost anything on them.
You could say, like, every 18 months, there's like a 180 reversal on what people think about Neanderthals. They go from being the peaceful hippie types to, like, oh, they were uber violent, oh, they were basically like us, oh, they were totally not like us. It just kind of... Somebody has to publish a PhD dissertation and it gets changed. Because the evidence, and it does mention in the book, like, the evidence is basically non-existent. Like, there's a whole big long passage about how for years they thought the Neanderthals were too stupid to go fishing because fish bones don't fossilize well.
Yeah, so at first they thought Neanderthals didn't eat fish because it was like, we never found any fish bones. And then somebody points out, you know, fish bones, they don't fossilize. I mean, at least when you, you know, fish them and then you, you know, eat them, there's nothing left. Those tiny little fish bones, they just don't fossilize. Maybe that's why, you know, that's why we haven't found any fish bones.
What is it? The absence of evidence is an evidence of absence kind of thing?
Yeah. But what was the purpose of it? So... In terms of, like, talking about the kind of ideas that these leftists are into, that made sense. But why is it so much in the book? It's kind of like, because a lot of the book, probably at least a quarter of it, if not more, was just reading about, you know, emails from the guy about the Neanderthals. Like, it's kind of a lot.
If I had to make something up, it would be the narrator, Sadie, believes in nothing, and... This is her first time thinking, like, maybe there's a greater purpose beyond just getting paid to fuck people over. But in the end, she still does.
Spoiler, it's her last job. She quits the biz at the end.
Well, she gets paid a fuck ton, so she no longer has to work.
Yeah, but, like, I didn't get the sense throughout the book that she was like, I just need to make enough money to start my business. You know, it wasn't like...
Open my restaurant.
And she's like, I'm only stripping to pay for nursing school. Like, it was, you know, she was doing this job because she liked it.
But, you know, yeah, I mean, we don't know what she wants because she does, beyond her persona in this, she doesn't exist to us.
So maybe, I mean, so that's interesting. Right? Are we supposed to fill that gap in? Are we supposed to, like, project some?
We're filling in the gaps like... We're filling in the gaps for the Neanderthals.
I hate you, because...
We have so little evidence that we just have to figure out based on the things we are.
But we have a lot of evidence. We're just too dumb to understand it, I think, is more what's going on.
I know, because we don't know anything about her beyond...
No, I mean, my question of why did the book include all this stuff about Neanderthals, like all, like so much of it?
That's what that guy wrote about.
But she could have just written a paragraph.
He lives in caves.
He wrote another rambling screed about Neanderthals that was basically inaccurate. She didn't need to reproduce them.
I mean, yeah. It goes into the thinking of the guy who she may have met once, but then also that didn't seem to really matter.
No.
And then, you know, and kind of what the thoughts, like the sort of this is the philosophy of the radical commune. I mean, yes, but it need to be that much of the book.
Yeah, they could,
I'm sure there's something I'm just not understanding.
I mean, all these like Booker books have like, they're half story, half like, do you see the point I'm trying to make through this philosophy section? And it was, you know, it was a little heavy-handed in this one. I don't know what you're supposed to, I mean, I kind of understand the vibe, you know, what you're going for. But it was, there was a lot of, you know, like when they have like an exposition dump, this was like the opposite of that, where it's just like, by the way, here's a 3 pages on thoughts and feelings.
Oh, that's an introspection chart, is what that's called.
Oh, yeah.
The introspection Hershey squirts. Just every once in a while, I get a little, oh, it's back.
There was, I mean, I don't know, we talk about like, it doesn't matter how it ends, you know, like she sets up some guy.
So eventually, so she's infiltrating them. She like gains their trust a little bit, and she also starts fucking that guy.
She meets the guy Renee, who is like suave and cool somehow. But she is like, let me just go see what he's about. And he's like, go meet me by the lake. And then they go there, and he just like pushes her head down to blow him. She's like, oh, I guess I'm blowing this guy now. And I said, wow, and being a spy, it seems way cooler when you're the dude spy. as the girl, like, you know, like, oh, I don't really want to do the blowing. It's a very different activity. But she's like,
she
hey,
does
you know, like,
say, I'm not getting paid enough for this. Although, actually, when she has to fuck the other dude, the pretentious director dude, she's like, I'm not getting paid enough for this.
I bet she wishes she could have just kept it casual. This beer is called Keep It Casual, and it's from Sand City, and it's a double IPA. I went into their place recently, and they have, you know, 15 different to-go beers, and I had a stroller with my, you know, infant in there, and I'm like, I got the beers on the bottom of this. And the woman working there is like, what kind of beer are you into? And I was like, I'm like everyone else. I like IPAs. And she was like, oh, okay. Yeah, that's nice. Like, she was so like, oh, another asshole. Cool. And I was like, I will.
She really wanted to recommend the Kolsch.
Well, I saw a big bottle and I was like, oh, I bet that's a stout. And I was like, fucking Belgian farmhouse 4% beer. Suck my ass. I don't know. Fucking paid.
Probably tastes like sucking your ass.
It absolutely does. But like, it's about the process. So I bought all 4 of their IPAs. I was like, see you later. And they've been great. Very good. Very good IPA. Should make 8 of them. I mean, like, who goes in and like, let me buy your, I'm just going to pound those autumn ales. That doesn't happen.
Tastes like old leaves.
That was the name of Leaf Me Alone. It's the name of the beer. No, it wasn't. But, sorry, my daughter has discovered puns. She's not great at it yet, but she tries really hard, so we've been doing a lot of those.
She has a good teacher.
I try my best, but she'll do like some.
She has
like,
been the receiver of puns, I'm sure, she's many times.
The punishments have been severe. She will go, she'll like say something like a good pun like that. Like, or should he say, leave me alone, daddy? I'm like, nice. And then later she'll say one that's like not even fucking close to making human sense. It's like if you ask like fucking Alexa, so like, you know, easy peasy, or should I say easy sneezy, right? And I'm like, well, I guess you could, but that's not really how that works. I mean, that's fun, but that's not the same thing.
That rhymes.
We do a lot of, apparently you can't say easy peasy like Japanesey. That's racist. I don't know why. I mean, I don't know about the difficulty of being Japanese, but we do a lot of easy peasy lemon squeezy in my house. And then I was trying to think of other ones. And I found this like Reddit post from 11 years ago where someone's like, here's the opposite. And it was stress depressed lemon zest. And I've been laughing at that. Well, I don't think it's going to work on my kid. I'm going to try it next time. She's mad.
Those are more Those are more adult emotions. Yeah,
those are tough. I mean, I have to explain zesting.
And that's probably the hardest one.
Emotions and flavors.
Depression.
Yeah. Well, depression for a child, like, it's being very sad. Like, what's zest, Papa? Oh, it's when you just, like, you know that part of the fruit you don't eat? Apparently, if you eat the dandruff of it, that's good. And that's a flavor we like. And that's what lemon zest is. Mm. Yeah, sorry. Random aside there. I have another my son shit story, but I'll save that for later. We're not recording.
Okay.
Because it happened the other day, and I was like, I got to tell the gentleman. And I'm saying it now really to remind myself. Because I want to set him up for success in life, but I need to know what he's capable of.
It's capable of
lemon squeezy. There was some squeezing happening.
So she's infiltrating and you know, fucking Renee. And then at one point, and then after like probably a couple weeks of that, she goes to the commune and she sees Renee with his wife. And they're like, she's like glaring at her, Sadie. The wife is glaring at her, and she's like, "Uh-oh, I think I know what happened." And then she confronts her. It's like, "Are you having a thing with my husband?" And she's like, "No," and is in a way that is like completely obvious.
Well, because one of the things she does is she scales her language skill. So she's all of a sudden she's like, "What? Me no speak French." It's like, "I know what you're saying, American."
And then she gets a message from her employer, who you never find out who that is, but it's clearly the corporation that says, "We want, you know, there's going to be this festival, and a minor like government minister is going to be there, plus a famous French author. We want something to happen. And so we want these people to get in trouble." And specifically, they say, "He needs to die." And she replies back to them, "I'm not a hitman." And they reply, "But he needs to die. Get them to do it." And is like, "Name your price." And so she never says what her price is exactly, but it is clearly a very large amount of money. And I'm sure millions of dollars, something like that. Because, anyway, we'll get into that. So it was a lot of money. And she's like, and then they agreed. They didn't even counteroffer. There's also a random American there who doesn't speak very good French and feels like
he's an old boomer.
Yeah, doesn't feel like he's really there connected. He's just like, "Oh, you know, I got arrested for other things." I forget what it was, but anyway,
I mean, she looked into him and found she did a background check and she found that he'd done a lot of shit and he'd been in and out of jail.
Yeah. So
he was capable of doing, like, she was hoping to groom him into becoming her, I forgot his name too, but he was going to be the
Birdmore,
the fall guy later on.
So her plan is to have him, like, convince him or seduce him or convince him to, like, give him a gun and tell him, "You need to kill this guy for the movement." And, like, and they know that she's not in charge or anything like that, but she's going to pull some version of, you know, the leadership. They're just not like willing to take the steps necessary. You need to do this for the good of the movement. And at first he seems like he's into it. Like, oh yeah, you're right. And then he reveals that he's got hepatitis C and is probably not going to live that long. So he's kind of says, maybe I'm, yeah, so okay, I'll do it. And that this festival is like, you know, days away. And she also leaks. Because she's told by her mysterious employers that the French minister is going to be there. They don't know. So she tells them, and she basically leaks it to them. And they're like, "How do you know?" And she's like, "Well, part of her cover story was that she walked dogs in some other, like, fancy neighborhood." And it's like, "Oh, yeah, I know. And she told me just the other day." So anyway, people don't quite believe her, but they want to believe her. And even, the leader guy is, like, kind of wants to believe her. Even though she's not lying, but they should also not trust her. So she, like, all these preparations get underway. She, like, maps out her escape route, including, like, going, there's like a path that she goes and looks at and realizes it's, like, totally not cleared very well. And so she hires the two, like, older Maoist French people to like go and clear it, and they like clear it for her. And there's just like this big stack of logs that's going to come to important later. Oh, and we forgot to talk about the kid that impregnated his teacher at 11 years old.
Oh yeah,
that little aside.
He was like, was he Pascal's kid? I can't remember. He was some kid. He was the kid of. He was the son of someone on the commune.
There's also a thing where she talks about like the documentary she saw of the boy who fucked. Who was fucking the Italian
boy? 9-year-old who was like, hey, baby.
Literally, it's a baby.
Yep. Mm-hmm. The 9-year-old who was like, you know, 9-year-old Casanova. And then they talk about this. And then there's this other. So she hears about the 11-year-old who is now 13, but when he was 11, impregnated his teacher, which is totally crazy. But then she, and then when she tells somebody about it, like, oh, yeah, there's this documentary about this other kid who, when he was 9, was, like, fucking all the ladies, the 9-year-old ladies, you know. It's like, what?
But he's also
still,
like,
it's still a kid. So anyway, this other 13-year-old who was the 11-year-old who impregnated his teacher is, like, being an asshole. Anyway, so.
No.
Sadie hires.
Not him.
Yeah, can you believe it? So Sadie hires the, it's almost like he's. A little bit of arrogance. Sadie hires the old people to help just like fix up the path so she can use it as her getaway. And then the festival happens. The minister comes. The dude with Hep C like won't. Like she like finds him. And she, by the way, she's been drinking heavily and she's like very hungover and, you know, having a bad time and is clearly very stressed. But she like shows up a little bit late, but the dude there who's going to do the assassination, but then he says no. Then he's like, what? You thought I was going to do this? Which I was surprised.
He can tell she's an instigator.
Yeah, it's like, but yet, so she's like, oh, fuck, this mission's all, it's all gone wrong. But then, without her doing anything, I think, there's like, you know, a riot breaks out, you know, with the commune people kind of start up some minor riot.
They were dumping the milk.
Yeah, they're dumping milk.
It's like a weird county fair thing happening. There's like people bringing out.
It's an agricultural fair event. So all the farmers are there protesting, and the commune people have organized a milk dump to, and also they're going to give away all the milk to crash the price of milk. And in this chaos, there's, you know, things go awry because of all.
But
the
also,
milk.
It's just like it's the kind of event that nobody would act like. No person in power. This guy's like, you know, deputy agriculture fucking minister or whatever.
Yeah,
his bodyguard is like, this is bullshit, and he goes to try to talk to some girls. Like he's distracted. The other guy's like, oh, this is bullshit, and he goes around and
bull mared.
Nobody expects anything of this. It's like the perfect storm.
And then there's like, you know, there's some protesting and some like rioting and the police come in and try and like arrest them. And then that just makes it worse. And so the minister tries to leave by escaping up the trail. But then the 13-year-old who used to be 11,
Frank,
yeah, they call him Frank, even though that wasn't his name. So is there on a dirt bike and somehow the like chasing the minister. And then the minister tries to climb up the pile of logs. But the logs fall down on him, and he dies. And then Sadie just, like, literally just keeps going. She's like, oh, well, that was lucky. And then escapes to her car, drives away. And also and so she was only pretending to fuck that other guy. I mean, the like, director dude. But she had, the day before, gotten a message from somebody else, like, oh, he's fucking this starlet in the movie. She's like, oh, great. Now I don't have to break up with him. And so she gets away, and then there's a little epilogue where she, you know, gets paid her giant amount of money, where she immediately buys a Mercedes, finds a, like, friend, you know, like some, like,
she
hotel in the French Riviera. Oh, Spain. There you go. So drives to some, like, you know, very secluded, like, beach spot. But then she's there on her own, and she's like, yep, yeah, I'm just, you know, doing my thing on my own. And more employers are like, keep sending me emails like, hey, and she just keeps saying no. She's like, nope, I'm done.
And there's so many like little details. Like she says, I live in Priest Valley. And like, where's that? And she goes, exactly. Because earlier in the book, she said that was her cover story. I'm from Priest Valley, California. And I don't know if this matters. I'm sure it does. I'm sure it's the name means something.
It's a fake, it's like an unincorporated place on alongside a highway where no one actually lives. Right.
So there's all these details there. And then like the thing she buys the Mercedes matters because at some point someone was talking about how like the, you know, the Polish migrants working in the Mercedes factory or whatever ethnic minority, they would get their hand jammed up in the machine so they could, you know, they obviously were doing it on purpose so they can get...
They would spend all day drinking so they could get drunk as fuck before they purposefully put their hand into the machinery to destroy it so they could get paid out and then never have to work again. And the question is, like, are the conditions so bad that you'd rather go through life one-handed to never have to do this again, or... What? How does that work? It's like, oh yeah, it's complicated.
You know, I used to. This reminds me of in high school. I used to run cross country, and like a running sport is
because they were 90, still discovering.
Yeah, it was a smaller country.
Yeah.
It was like
definitely, you know, they were, you know, like we were excited when we got that 14th.
You guys
state.
Are so fucking mad about Manifest Destiny. This is enough.
But so any like distance running sport is 90% mental. I mean, it's a physical sport, except actually the challenge is making yourself do it. And I remember a friend of mine, we would run 5Ks, and a friend of mine was saying, you know, we'd get into the mental state of, if I fell down and hurt myself, I could stop running. And that's the same mentality. If I'm going to put my hand inside the machine and crush it so that I never have to do this again.
Yeah.
I mean, I understand that to a degree. That's very bleak. It's very terrible. So, you know, it's one of the many things in the book. We're like, oh, there's a lot of criticism of the modern world and capitalism and industry and our negative effects on the environment. I don't know if we're supposed to take something from that in a book where the main character or narrator is a hired agitator who doesn't care.
Is the bad guy, kind
yeah.
of?
Yeah.
I don't know. There was a few lines in it that I thought were interesting. I don't exactly understand 100%. Maybe discuss them. I also don't know why they're in this book. Like sometimes books like these, they put out like, here's an interesting thought. And you're like, okay, yeah, that's an interesting thought. But like, what does it have to do with this book? I don't know. But the first one I wrote down is about Lucienne talking about movies. It says, I had seen many of the films he cared about, talked about. This was important because cinephiles like Lucien draw for their confidence to make films from their knowledge of film history without understanding that the essential spark elevating a movie to art never derives from the low domain of expertise. Cinephiles are accountants, but I could speak their language. It's just like, okay, so yeah, you can know everything about film, or like, well, we could know stuff about books. Like you get a PhD in books. But those people doesn't necessarily make them good writers, which is pretty...
pretty evident from this year.
Pretty on the point for this list. Which, you know, they are good writers, but you know, I don't like these books. But there's a difference between knowing how things are supposed to work and the theory behind it and making something great out of it. It's an interesting idea. I don't understand what had to do with this story when she was talking about it.
One of the things I looked up recently, I was telling you guys before we recorded, like blogs, people also read all the bookers. And one of the things I kept seeing about this book is people talk about how creative it was. And I was like, what was creative about it? It was, except that, you know, it had like a bunch of random things that were smushed together. Except maybe having this kind of character deliver your environmental message or your political message as opposed to your normal type of character that does it. I don't know. That was the one thought I had though. You know, like normally it's like this would be an allegory and there's a person who's in the commune, you know, and they're
from the other side.
But here it's like, oh, I guess that's different. But I don't know. And again, as Nate said before, it's something there. I'm probably just not seeing it.
Maybe it's about the, you know, they have, she talks about the commune where they have like the people are out there laboring, doing farming, which is hard work, but there's like four or five dudes who sit in a room in the library and just like read and write political theory. Even though it's a commune and it's non-hierarchical, as they claim, even though it's not because they have leaders, and labor is not really divided equally.
So they're communists, and communists believe in a classless society, and they tried to create a classless society, except that they failed. There's clearly an upper class of the leadership, and then the intellectuals who don't do the physical labor, and then the physical laborers, and then there's like the women who take care of the children, and there's the line about, you know, well, in blah, blah, blah societies, they tend to fall back on the natural division of labor, yeah, whatever the line was, you know. And so all the teenage girls are taking care of the younger kids, or the younger women are taking care of the children. Not just their own, but just like all the children. Reminds me, I read a book in college. I had to read a book about Vietnam after the war, when they really were a fully communist country, and they, you know, and it was about how they were trying to create a classless society, but they completely failed, and they clearly had, you know, some people are more equal than others. And so clearly that also happened in the Soviet Union and happened in all these places. So it's like very critical. So the book is like very critical of these like leftists.
Well, I think it's a step beyond that even. It's like they're not communists, or they kind of are, but they claim to be anarchists. But they have essentially developed some shitty kind of communism, which is a different thing. And it's all the two other people that come up with their Maoist hats. You're talking about their Maoist hats, but Mao was a different kind of communist entirely. And he was very authoritarian, and he killed tens of millions of people.
Isn't there such a thing as anarcho-communism?
Well, that's the shortened
Kropotkin, or whatever that guy's name was.
Anarchist is like basically a shortened form of that kind of.
Well, there are different types of anarchism. There's anarcho-capitalism.
Yeah, certainly. Oh, yeah, that's a different breed entirely.
Yeah, you're right. So anarchy is not just a thing of the left.
Anarcho-communism generally is the what when people say anarchist, they tend to mean towards that side. But in terms of the way the world has broken down since this shit happened, anarchists and communists are very different. It's basically libertarian versus fascism, like in terms of authoritarianism. It's, you know, the left and right, but the freedom and authoritarian scales. So like anarchists are communist ideologically, but they don't like authoritarianism, whereas communists are heavy into authoritarianism. There is a central state that runs and controls all things. So it's not non-hierarchical. There are people in charge that make sure things go the way it's supposed to be. Famously, they kill a lot of anarchists.
I was under the impression that true communism had never been tried.
In Cuba?
Yeah, I don't think that's the line that whenever you corner a communist person, like, when has it worked? And they go, they never really got it right. Like, oh, okay.
Yeah, there's a whole bunch of fucking weirdos out there who think.
Oh, I've been told that by professors. Yeah. I can remember.
There's a whole like class of, you know, scholars and, you know, like at this fucking commune where they don't do the work. They sit around the circle jerk about theory, which doesn't fucking matter.
Yeah, someone has to grow a fucking potato more theory occasionally.
Yeah. And that is where the hierarchy stuff comes into play. Where it's like, yes, we're all free here, but some of us have to work in the fields.
Right, and some of us translate our unreadable bullshit into another language.
Yeah. If they were all doing all the things, that's one thing, but they're not, because these people are, you know, they're imperfect, I guess. But they're also, there's a guy who just isn't it to bang all the ladies, which happens all the time, too. Also, they're French, so that should be like, assumed.
If you're a French man in power, what else are you there for? It's not the baguettes. It's to bag ass. It's to get laid. You know? It's to show the ladies your baguette.
There was one other line I wrote down, which I think makes more sense.
Are you like suggesting that the author is like some conservative.
I don't know where she lies on the spectrum of things.
Shitting on the communist type?
I don't know where she lies on the spectrum of things, but there's, you know.
I don't either.
It's fucking impossible. And also, there's so many arguments about, like, infinitesimally small details, like, that no one's ever going to agree. But I don't know where she's at in that world. But she did write one thing, not the line I was thinking about. She wrote one thing that I have to take real exception with. I had to look up if she's ever even been to New York, because she said the FBI took pictures of all these anarchist guys in Times Square. You can see the bodegas in the background.
No, you
there
cannot.
Are no bodegas in fucking Times Square.
How good is that lens?
It's they should have said prêt à manger.
A bodega.
Or another chain. Or Bubba Gump Shrimp Company.
There's a Sbarro serving real New York pizza. That's what they have.
And an Olive Garden serving real New York Italian food.
Well, if you're there, you are family.
Yeah, that's where you can get the finest locally sourced gabagool.
And that local family-run M&M store.
Yes, for mom and mom's mom. That's what it stands for. It's a family recipe. Family,
yeah, there's no bodegas in Times Square. It's just the naked cowboy and tourists.
And Elmos. Large Elmos. Oh. Large knockoff Elmos. But that line was like, ooh, you've lost me, lady.
It's not bone.
This is the other line I wrote down. I forget. Oh, this is one of Bruno's emails. He said, in the absence of an enemy and other, we become ourselves responsible for good and evil. These are in his email ramblings. So, you know, it's like, just throwing out ideas. And then gets back to, then my fake boobs lured in a Frenchman. I was like, okay, well.
Even more successfully than real boobs would have. Because they're French men.
True.
Could have shown him a 400-pound man's nipple, and he would be like, well, let's check it out. Like, that's
I am willing to investigate.
The horniest people on earth.
No, that's Italian men.
Well, no, they would be interested in it. Well, actually, they'd be more interested in the fat man's nipple because it would have hair on it.
True.
That's the good stuff.
That's what I'm talking about.
You know that joke, Nate, about Italian baby? How can you tell if a baby's Italian? They only take the nipple. They only take a bottle if the nipple has hair on it. See, the women of Italy.
I understand the premise. I do get the premise of the joke.
The bambinos. I don't know if we're supposed to care about that man's thoughts, though. Because he's full of shit. He's objectively wrong often.
He's wrong about... he's
talking out of his ass.
He's like, we should be nicer to the earth. But, you know, arguing about like how the Neanderthals did it was dumb because he was wrong about all of it. And because we made it all up. He made it all up.
So, at the end of the book, did you notice that he actually changes his mind? He actually, in the beginning, all the emails are like, you know, the Neanderthals. They're like, you know, that... And the guy himself, he's like anti... all civilization, you know, we've been just terrible to the planet and stuff like that. And it's also against capitalism because it exploits people.
Well, did he come from a family that went, like, died in the Holocaust or something? So that can fuck you up.
Yeah, and then he himself was a radical during the, like, the Paris Uprising or the Paris Commune or whatever it was in 1968.
The Paris Commune was in, like...
He got...
That was a long time ago, wasn't it?
Okay, I don't remember the right term, but there were like big leftist protests, student protests in the 60s in Paris, and then he was
68?
A leader of them, and then they just like got shut down, and then he left for the countryside, and that's where he is. Anyway, in the beginning, he talked about the Neanderthals are being like, you know, pure, you know, and one with the earth kind of stuff, and then... He says something in one of his final messages. He says something like, you know, I've come to realize that the prospect of destroying capitalism from the inside just isn't going to happen. We're just not going to do it. You know, we thought that capitalism would destroy itself, and it clearly that's not true. But he also says something about we were against progress just for progress sake. Like, we were just against progress. We thought progress was wrong because it was all just, like, developing capitalism. But then he was like, you know, like, progress does have something to it.
Yeah,
I forget exactly what his reason was.
He's fucking writing these on a Gmail.
In a cave.
Like,
That's true.
It does get mentioned.
He has Wi-Fi in his cave, and he's like, you know what? Maybe there's something to this.
I think it is said in the book explicitly, like, he's a fucking total hypocrite. He's, you know, anti-capitalism, anti-corporations, yet he's using the technology that is only offered because of those companies.
Just like the Unabomber typing his manifesto on a typewriter. You
know, that's a little different. I mean, they also had email in that guy's day. He was choosing to down gear, shift it a little bit. This guy's using cloud storage for his ramblings about cave people. He's peak full of shit. But I don't know if I
want to get into this, but
do it, man. No, do it.
I'll probably
do it.
I'm cutting all this at some point. It's just like this is a common argument. It's like, if you believe these things, you shouldn't be allowed to use a computer. It's like, you can't just cut yourself off. You live in the world that exists. And if you can use the things that exist, you can be like, hey, maybe shit's kind of fucked up. And he's like, well, you can't use a computer because you think progress is bad. It's like, that's not, he's like, he said the Andrews all stuff is stupid. But to say,
he's advocating living in caves.
He lives in a cave.
Like, this isn't like listen, Monsanto is bad, and therefore it's like, you can't eat food. Come on.
Yeah, I mean, he's an extreme example of this, and he is crazy. But this is a common argument people use to say, like, people who think we should be nice to the Earth is like, well, you said that from your computer that you reinvented because of, I sucked a dinosaur's cum out for oil because of technology. You know, shit like that.
I've seen that one.
That's how you get oil.
But I think it's kind of, I mean, it's the same category of people being like,
white gold. I'm
critical.
Ew.
Smegasaurus.
No, that's the worst dinosaur.
anyway, distracted. Yeah, I hear what you're saying, but like, it's like the same category. And people are like, America's policy towards topic X is bad. And you go, then leave. Like, it's really fucking childish.
It's but reductive.
But this guy's whole fucking thing is the system must be torn down. Root and branch. Like, it must be just demolished.
You know, it does not go into it much, but, I mean, it does in the book a little bit more, but we didn't go into it. Like, he is someone whose family was wiped out during the Holocaust. And he's after that happens, you'd be like, we have gone astray. If this can happen, something has to change. And that can radicalize anyone.
But, like, I hear what you're saying, Jimmy. Like, if that's your first rebuttal in a debate, like, well, no, you can't even type to me because that's stupid. But this guy's going on and on about how the Neanderthals had it figured out and they were right. And yet he's typing it on a fucking laptop. Like, that's some grade A hypocrisy.
I don't know if it's hypocrisy.
How is it not? If he's like, this is wrong. What we have done is wrong. But like, but I need to blog it. That's absurd.
I mean, The argument is you are living in the world that you live in, but
his goal is to change that world.
And
right, so
until
you go,
then you live in the world. It's like people saying like, "Oh, you're a communist, and yet you buy things from a store." It's like, well, that's the world I live in. I have to buy things from the store.
I just don't.
It's beyond, you know, our
there are in betweens here because like.
Yeah, there are in-betweens. That's why it's not necessarily this guy's arguments fall flat just because he used a computer. Like, that's the method of communication we have. If he thinks things should be changed, but he's only allowed to, like, send carrier pigeons or, like, write it on a rock, then, like, he's not doing any good either way. But it's not necessarily hypocritical to use the stuff that's around. He's not trying to make things worse. It'd be hypocritical if he like
whole
if he
argument
worked for
is that the things that are around are bad.
I'm saying if he like worked for an oil company or invented if he invented a machine that burns down forests to make toilet paper, That would be hypocritical.
I am sure that's not how that works.
I'm saying this is you'd have to invent it. It's an invention.
Oh, yeah. He's like the guy from the Sneetches.
Yeah.
It's a machine.
He just made it. He's made a machine. It cuts down the truffula trees and makes fucking Sneeds, of course. But yeah, so if he did those things, it'd be hypocritical. But it's like just using toilet paper doesn't mean he hates forests. He's out of leaves. I don't know how this guy shits. He might use leaves.
I don't believe you. I think this is nonsense. Nate, fix this for us.
No.
There's no right answer. This is the last book,
so,
thankfully.
Let's get into Did We Like It? And I'm going to start out with, so the book I read before this was Enlightenment, and that sucked so much that when I read this, I was like, oh, yeah, this is actually pretty good. I actually enjoyed it quite a bit. It was, in comparison, a much more fun book.
If you had read this in a vacuum, how would you feel? First of all, you have to turn a light inside the vacuum.
I cannot answer that question. Yes. It's too dark to read.
Can you turn on light in a vacuum?
I cannot answer that. I really have no
idea. You can't be in a vacuum,
Jimmy,
because that's how you die, son. Die, son? No?
Oh, God.
Come on. What? Come on. You make a better vacuum pun.
That sucks.
Who were you to say?
Oh, touche. Okay, so I actually thought it was pretty good. I mean, it was enjoyable. I was like, as a book, I was interested in it. I was interested all the way through and like, what's going to happen? I do think that the ending was like kind of dramatic, but also
abrupt.
I wasn't like, oh, yay, this is so amazing. But it was pretty good. And because the other books were also not were not great, I was like, hey, no, this is fine. I was like, this is pretty good. Now, would I recommend it to somebody as a spy thriller? Probably not. I would tell them, I don't know what I would tell them, but I would not tell them, oh, yeah, so remember how you loved Jason Bourne? Well, have I got a spy thriller for you? I would not do that. But I enjoyed it.
I had a question about the ending, actually. I thought it was kind of confusing. I mean, not confusing. I know what happened. I didn't really get why it worked out. Like, her job was to make sure this guy got killed by someone of the commune so they could bust the commune. And instead he dies in a log accident. I mean, he was technically killed by the kid, chased him into the log accident, but no one knows about the kid except her. So to the public's eyes, he just died in a log accident. I don't really understand how that got the job done and allowed the police to bust. Did they just need any kind of pretense? It didn't matter.
She just got really lucky. Well, they were rioting, and at the event that the minor bureaucrat was at, he died. So like by proximity of you were there doing bad things at the same time that the guy died, therefore you're guilty. Okay.
She said it's something like they didn't even ask any questions. They didn't care.
They just needed some kind of excuse.
They just paid it out. Like this got us where we wanted to go. We're not looking to nickel and dime. Or
they might think she's a genius for causing him to die in a log accident.
Again, Taco Bell has been guilty of many of those.
Many log accents, yes. I liked most of it. I got tired of it probably like halfway, quarter way, three quarters of the way through. I was pretty tired of it. Like, there was too much other shit. And like, all the emails were just like, there's too much like not story. It's too much like philosophizing. And like the fact that she didn't get to the commune until halfway through the book was kind of weird pacing wise. Like, I thought it was pretty good, but I didn't love it.
It was Nate, what do you think? Or did you go already?
You did, yeah.
I'm sorry. I'm already fucking. I drank three beers really fast.
Well, this is accidentally for us, we found out today, the last book on the shortlist. So we accidentally read the right books. We read a bunch of extra ones, which sucked.
And some ones that are on the shortlist that also suck.
Yeah. But we don't have to read the last four, so we're not going to.
So apparently the Booker Prize is being announced today, but we're recording this well beforehand, the day that the
and
shortlist is
And excited to
announced.
Get back to reading the books that we want to.
For other
I don't
books
even know what
hate.
That's going to feel like.
It's just been so long.
James is going to win, obviously. Yeah. It's going to be fucking James.
Probably. Yeah.
if James doesn't win, I will be stupefied. Like, how could that not win?
Hell, the creation lake, orbital, James, the safe keep, stone yard,
fucking orbital. So, holy okay. shit.
Orbital, I know. Like, orbital, it doesn't have a plot. So, like, there's, like, really? They're going to give it to that? I'm very surprised it's even on the short list. Although, because I'm so surprised it's on the short list, clearly I have no idea what they care about. So,
that's
who
a good
knows?
Point. I have one thing that stuck out to me looking back at the list. They really tended to like introspective, thoughtful books. And Orbital is the most that.
Yep.
So it has mm-hmm. a chance of winning, though it shouldn't.
I would say, usually when we do, you know, say like it has a grand cause or a social cause, these six, James, you know, slavery, yeah, that's a big one, I guess. The other ones, not so much. Safe keep, lesbians
safe keep has,
after World War II, but
The Holocaust
and the Holocaust,
yeah. And, but like
but it's
also
post Holocaust,
but an unexplored part of the Holocaust.
Also an issue. So, and has there been a Booker Prize winning book about lesbians? I can't think of one. No,
I think The Life of Pi might have been. No,
what?
Come on,
Pot.
No, it was not.
Life of Pi won the Booker, but it's not about lesbians.
It's about a tiger.
No, that's what I mean.
Yeah, it was a
lesbian. So, man and his tiger friend.
The title. I'm going by title. Pi is one of the many, many slangs for vagina. Never mind.
Is there a word that isn't?
Penis.
Dick.
Okay, for that one.
Lady penis.
There you go. See? Kind of works. So I would say that in terms of like social issues, if they're really going to pick one largely based on the social issue it talks about, that one is also in the running. Though I would also say, James, the more conventional is going to be the most conventional pick that they could do, which means they might just go for it. But, you know, lesbians and the Holocaust, it's got two.
Three of them are tangentially... You know, environmentalism.
James is the only novel written by a man on the short list.
Yeah, that is true.
Ooh.
Part of these things is always like, since it's a different judging panel every year, you never know what the fuck they're going to go for. So it's impossible to predict. This one, they chose three really weird ones. James and a book about lesbians after the Holocaust. And this one, which was... adjacent to a normal spot book, but like had a bunch of other shit in it. I don't know.
I mean, the creation like is more readable than a bunch
it's
of
the
other
least
ones
weird.
We did. So I would say in turn
that doesn't always help it.
It is more like a regular novel, but that isn't a plus when they're picking the Booker Prize.
I'm surprised this one made the shortlist, honestly.
It was a unique book. It's different.
I mean, I would have thought it had been, compared to the other ones, I mean, James is not that, like, you know, weird and, like, lofty. I mean, not lofty, but, like, you know, detached magic, you know, is this even a book? It was a book. It made sense. It had a fucking plot that went forward. Whereas the other ones, you know, they picked all the really weird ones.
In Held, who knows what's even happening in that book?
Dude, I had to look up which one Held was. I was like, what the fuck was Held about?
You know what? I think Held has a good chance of winning.
At this point, it is a complete crapshoot on what's going to win. There's absolutely no way to know what these people are thinking.
All right, why Held?
Looking at the list...
That one has the least cause.
But they I don't know C. if they were into cause. We might be making that up. Yeah. They were into thinking.
The other shortlists
had that. They
were into
thinking, you know, and Held was all about contemplating your mortality. You don't get...
There was a lot of it this year was about death.
Death and navel gazing, which is probably a beer. Like that's what they did. And then James, yeah. Because you couldn't pretend it didn't happen. I would not be upset if Held won. I actually really liked that book.
I did.
Looking
like
back it. On them now, Creation Lake was fun enough. It had some like dark humor. James was entertaining because it was plot the whole time, though it kind of felt like fan fiction. And then Held hit all the snobby marks, but wasn't that bad. And fuck Orbital. Fuck that so much. If that wins, I don't want to read these ever again.
Yeah, Orbital was definitely the worst one. Orbital was the... Held was the most confusing. Orbital was just the worst one. James was probably, I'd say, the best as a book, like a work of literature, you know, capital L. But I think my favorite of these was Stoneyard Devotional in terms of like weirdness versus book.
James, can I say, is also one that a not book snob could read and understand.
Absolutely, yeah. It's a book you can read and like, oh, that was a Bookerling? Oh, I didn't know that. You know, and it's probably the book people that don't know about this, of all these, will read. Because he's like an author that people know about, you know. Non-Booker people know about. Nate, which one do you think is going to win? If you get it right,
God.
We'll get you your finest dog.
To be honest, which would I like the most, or which do I think is going to win? I think James is going to win the most. Most likely James is going to win, but I would put actually Safekeep as a strong contender because of its social issues. And it is like also a readable book, literary yet also readable book about social issues, which is like a thing. And I don't think anybody has written about those, or at least not recently. That's why I would pick that.
I mean, the problem is they're all strong contenders now because they have a 1 in 6 chance. And there's no way to at all to know.
Except Orbital, because it sucks.
I mean, so Creation Lake sucks, but it has the same chance.
While like kind of unique, like it's a unique idea to have like the main character kind of be the villain who's infiltrating, you know, the well-meaning but misguided people. There is something unique about it, but it's almost too normal. And Stoneyard Devotional, a little bit the same, although I actually found that pretty nice. I kind of liked it. Held was just weird, and I thought was like really pretentious, which is not a minus when it comes to a literary award. It isn't, but I thought was very pretentious.
It was definitely the most pretentious of these six.
Yep. And Orbital doesn't have a plot, so it was dumb. I was, where are my space aliens invading Earth? Come on, man.
Or anything. Just anything happening.
Just invade something. Come on.
I guess we'll find out together.
Yep. And why don't you tell us who won? Send us an email to drunkguysbookclub@gmail.com.
Follow us on Twitter, DrunkGuysBC.
Or go to Facebook and Instagram at DrunkGuysBookClub.
Keep forgetting to put this up earlier because no one's listening anymore, but if you want to support the podcast, go to patreon.com and /DrunkGuysBookClub. Support us there. Or just leave us a review wherever you're listening. One for each book on the shortlist. One star for each book on the shortlist would be great.
And if you want to support us emotionally and physiologically and other adverbs, you can join us on Goodreads, where we talk through writing to each other.
Someone just supported us abusively. I don't know if you saw that post on our...
I didn't, but I look forward to being hurt emotionally.
It's mostly me.
Definitely. And check out the Hopped Up Network, a network of independent beer podcasters. And thanks for listening.